Sean, I really appreciate you asking for this time today, because I've been doing the very best I can, and I hope it's enough, but we're trying to get communications established with as many people around the state as we can to encourage people to be optimistic and to continue to do the social distancing and washing the hands, etc. We're having regular calls with the hospital association, with all legislators, with the coronavirus task force, the governor's own recall with Vice President and President Trump, and also with NGA and the RGA governor's groups, with county commissioners, the Big Ten mayors, and the League of Municipalities. So lining up all these calls periodically takes a lot of time, but it's important to get the word out, and I just thank you for wanting to play a part in getting the word out. And also, Sean, just for your information, there's some things that we've done from the governor's office. For example, on March 6th, before we ever had the first case, I set up the coronavirus task force. And then on March 13th, again, before we even had a case, I issued the state of emergency. And I've made a list of some 18 different initiatives that we've taken since March 6th. And let's see, I'm told today is we're up to, what is it, 1,013? So, you know, the cases are continuing to increase. 1,060, I'm told. There are now confirmed cases and 17 confirmed deaths. So I just wanted you to know that we've got this list of 18 things that we've done, but included in those 18 things, the Strategic Asset Team, the SAT, S-A-T, Strategic Asset Team. That's a group of people, volunteers, led by Brian Rell, Baltimore Bingham's Government Affairs Unit, to vet all leads of possible sources of PPEs and equipment. And John, you can't imagine the number of folks that are out there trying to scam states all over the United States, and especially and us too. And you vet a lead and you find out that it's counterfeit. And so it's very disheartening, but out of every 100 leads we get, we may find 99% of those are counterfeit or scams or something. But we've got this SAT team working hard, and they're doing a great service. So when we do spend taxpayers' dollars on getting supplies, we'll know that they're good supplies and reliable. Another initiative we've taken now, led by Greg Canfield, we call it BAMA, Business and Manufacturing Alliance. And Greg and his team are identifying Alabama firms that can produce PPEs and hospital supplies that we all need. And so if we can find firms in Alabama that we know are reliable, we'd love to do business with them as well. And thirdly, we set up something called the Renewal Team. It's led by Johnny Johns, former CEO, and his wife, Dr. Nancy Johns. It's an ad hoc group of volunteers, of former CEOs, who have volunteered to work with the finance director and my cabinet agencies to absolutely think outside the box. You know, government's not real good at being creative and thinking outside the box, but CEOs are. And they're going to help guide us to get the millions of dollars that are coming in from Washington absolutely in a direct fashion to the people and small businesses of Alabama. So I'm grateful to those CEOs that have volunteered and stepped up. And another thing we've done, I just got off the phone with the Corps of Engineer people. This region is led by General Holland, Diana Holland, and Colonel Joe Lee out of Mobile. And we've asked them to identify possible facilities in six areas of the state that could possibly be used if needed for surge, hospital surge. I just got off the phone with them, and they have given me a report on several locations, Mobile and Birmingham primarily. And next week they're going to give me a report on sites in Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, Montgomery, and Auburn. But these are simply their assessment of potential facilities that could be converted if we need to at the appropriate time, and the number of beds that each facility could handle. So I just want you to feel good to know that we've doing some pretty creative things to be effective and make the best use of our resources as we possibly can, as we work so hard to protect our people's health and the safety. And by the end of this week, in fact, they tell me we're going to launch it Saturday morning, if all goes well, a brand new website that we're going to call Together Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it's being put together by Alabama Power and Opportunity Alabama. And it's a website that will provide the latest information we have on what we're doing to prepare for the spread of the virus. And it'll have a link to a new type, Google type page, where people can simply type in their questions like, well, I have certain symptoms. Should I get a test or not? Or something like, oh, I've lost my job. How do I file for unemployment? Mm-hmm. And this website will let them type in that their respective question, and it will immediately go to the website or the page where that answer is found. So we're supposed to be the most advanced website in the coronavirus, most advanced website on coronavirus, and it's report in the United States. So we're optimistic about that, and I'm sure you've also heard that Tim Cook was very generous. He and Apple donated some 200,000 masks. They arrived here in Montgomery on Saturday. So I just want to give you some behind-the-scenes activities that make the front page of the news every day.
Yes, ma'am. I really appreciate you taking the time. Just had a few questions, and you've kind of discussed this broadly a little bit already, but when you're factoring in all these decisions, how does balancing the economic impacts factor in?
Sean, that's one of the hardest things I have to do, but both of those are absolutely important. Economic health is vital to our people as well as their safety and their health. So it's a balancing act, both of which are very important. And I'm sure we're going to make some mistakes along the way. And we're not going to please everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. But we're trying hard to protect both our economy and our small business, our large businesses, so we can keep our economy robust and it'll be there when we're all ready to go back to work.
We've heard over the last few days some criticism, and including from a few state legislators, that the latest health order favored big box stores and, put the small businesses maybe at a disadvantage compared to those big box orders or big box stores, excuse me. What would you respond to that, those criticisms?
Well, the job that Dr. Harris and I have is to protect our people of our state and not worry about who buys what from where. Mm-hmm. We're trying to protect our people as best we can. And some of the stores that we close, like nail salons and massage parlors and tattoo parlors, et cetera, those operators, you know, operate 6 inches from the customer. So those need to be closed. And we're just trying to provide access to people to be able to get what they need, but maybe not everything that they want from where they've been getting it. It's just a matter of trying to protect people from coming in contact with one another.
Why are gun stores specifically not deemed non-essential?
Say again?
Why are gun stores not on the list of non-essential stores? Why were they kind of carved out or left open, I should say?
Yeah, the gun stores are open. If it's not on that list, it's not closed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Why were those left open, though?
Well, think that gun stores come in close contact with people. They just claim guns and sell ammunition. And we're trying to reduce the number of the close contact with folks.
Governor DeSantis in Florida issued a stay-at-home order or shelter-in-place today in Florida. Obviously, we're going with our safe-at-home order right now. Is there a point in the near future when you think we might move to a shelter-in-place? How does that decision get made?
Well, I hope we don't have to have a shelter-in-place period now or ever. Mm-hmm. Because when you close a business, it's hard to bring them back to life. And so if we can limit access that we have now, then we don't need the shelter-in-place if we can have it.
Have you and your team identified, I guess, the metrics or the data that, you know, is there a threshold we hit, whether it's cases or deaths or just the slope of the curve where you do think shelter in place is going to be triggered?
Well, we have not identified specific metrics yet to decide when a state can loosen restrictions and open some businesses back up. That's something certainly we're going to be looking at. But things are so fluid right now, John. Mm-hmm. That's just not one of the things we've been focused on.
Okay. And I know you're in the middle of all this, and you know, things are so fluid, as you said. But is there anything looking back, maybe towards the beginning of March, the early February, you wish you could have done differently? Or are you confident right now in what the state's done completely?
Well, you're never totally confident with everything you do because you keep trying so hard to prevent more cases. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, especially with some of these initiatives that we've put in place, I think we're ahead of them. Some of the other states are trying to be creative and provide for the best materials we can get without being scammed, and also keeping our people safe and happy. I mean, safe and healthy. But we're just doing the best we can do at this point.
Right. You mentioned how important the economy is, and once business is closed, it's hard to revive them. I want to talk about that a little bit. I know it's hard to put the coronavirus aside right now, but what do you think the underlying strength of the economy is still once we get past this? I mean, do you think we're going to be able to quickly rebound?
Well, our workforce continues to be our strong ace in the hole, and our ability to train and prepare workers for all kinds of occupations. So that's always going to stay a strong point of emphasis for this administration. And our people are happiest when they're busy and working and productive for their families and can have income to provide for them.
Are there certain businesses or sectors that your administration, whether it's the Labor Department or Commerce, have identified are going to need more help to get back going?
Well, the stimulus package coming out of Washington has made some monies available, especially for small businesses. And speaking of small businesses, I hope you've got a press release that I was just given a few minutes ago that we signed off on this morning. About small businesses need to go immediately to their financial advisor, their bank, any of the financial firms that are federally insured by the FDIC can help them know exactly how to get ready for this money that's coming in, and they need to go today to meet with their financial person, their bank or their credit union or whomever, to understand right quick what materials they're going to need to be front and center for these funds that are coming. The bottom line is they're going to be, these funds will be available all over the United States, and those funds are going to get gobbled up. First come, first serve. And I'm trying real hard with this press release and a list of information about the small business loans, et cetera, that you can go straight to your local bank or credit union that's federally insured, and you don't have to deal with SBA operations. So the small business owners need to go see their financial advisor ASAP, get prepared, and be first in line to get this money that's devoted to them. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, both of our budgets, the education budget especially, is very reliant on sales tax. How do you think the coronavirus pandemic is going to affect your proposed budgets this year?
Well, Sean, for sure, we got to, get through just with a bare bones budget when the legislature comes back April 28th. Mm-hmm. If I have to call a special session, if we find that we have extra resources, but we can't even think about proposing a pay raise for our education folks or our state employees at this point.
Right. Are you hopeful that they're going to be able to get back in on April 28th or just sometime between May 18th and pass the budget, or do you think we're going to need a special session for that?
Well, we're not going to know until July 15th or after July 15th how much the revenues are since they've moved the tax filing date. Mm-hmm. So, all we can do now is have a budget before May 18th, but it'd be bare bones. And then when we find out how much revenues we do have coming in, if there's enough that we can be effective, if we have a special session, then I'll sure call it back. Hmm.
We're also hearing a lot of chatter about Medicaid expansion. Is that something you're considering more now than you were 2 months ago, say?
No, I'm not. Nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. How do you pay for it?
Right.
There's just no one silver bullet that's going to please everybody about everything. Mm-hmm. And we simply have to make those decisions that will be effective and protect the health and safety of most of our people.
Speaking of just the general crowd talking about Medicaid expansion, UAB has told me that their testing is a little different than the state test, and their tests are actually getting more positives, and some of those positives will go to the state for testing and come back negative for the state testing. Is there a concern that there's a little underreporting, possibly, just in the fact that UAB seems to have a more sensitive test than that state test? I know it's handed down to us by the CDC, but is that any kind of concern when we're talking about just the accuracy of hospitalization numbers and total confirmed cases?
Well, certainly UAB is a very valued asset for our great state, but it's an asset to people across the globe as well. Mm-hmm. And I know that the UAB has been working on its own, developing their own COVID-19 test. Mm-hmm. You may have to talk to Dr. Harris and the medical experts at Public Health to get some more detail on that.
Yes, ma'am.
But we're grateful for the work that UAB is doing.
There was a report this morning, it was on Vice News, about Alabama being one of the states that are, when you have a confirmed coronavirus patient, they are giving the address of that person, the home address, to our 911 board and first responders. Is that something that you support, or do you think there's a privacy concern involved in that?
Well, it's also a concern for the police officer who gets a call with government. Mm-hmm. A situation, an address of such and such a zip code or such and such a location, they want to know how to be prepared, if there's a COVID-19 patient inside. So I'm not familiar with that report yet.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I think we've covered a good amount of things, but I just wanted to see kind of in conclusion, if you have a message to the public right now. I know you talked about Together Alabama and being optimistic, but I just wanted to give you the opportunity to, kind of give a closing message and just speak directly to the public on where we are.
To my fellow Alabamians, indeed, these are difficult and trying and challenging times for all of us. Coronavirus cases continue to escalate. However, they are ramping or leveled off. Last 5 or 6 days at UAB, et cetera. And so we're hoping that's a trend. But the bottom line is the people of Alabama are strong, we're resilient, we're determined, we are faith-based. We believe in God Almighty. And I just encourage our people to stay strong, stay healthy, do the basic things that we say over and over again. Wash your hands at least 20 seconds with good soap and water. Certainly practice social distancing. And the president mentioned last night that we need to continue social distancing through April 30th at least. So I think if we just continue to do what we know to do, though we may be bold as a goer, but at the same time, we're doing what is making a difference and slowing the increase in new cases. So I just encourage our people. We're going to get through this. Yes, we are. And I want to thank you for your time today, Sean.